We all belong outside. We're drawn to nature. Whether it's the recorded sounds of the ocean we doze off to, or the succulents that adorn our homes, nature makes all of our lives, well, better. Despite all this, we often go about our busy lives removed from it. But the outdoors is closer than we realize. With AllTrails, you can discover trails nearby and explore confidently. With offline maps and on-trail navigation, download the free app today.
If you're still waiting for a sign, here's another one. At California Psychics, we reject 98% of the psychics who apply to work for us. So we only connect you with the best. That's how we can guarantee if your reading isn't life-changing, it's free. And right now, new customers receive 20 minutes for just $20. If that's not a sign, I don't know what is. Dramatic sound effect incoming. Experience the joy of certainty at CaliforniaPsychics.com.
Welcome in, San Diego. Happy Wednesday to you. Tony Gwynn Jr., Matt Scray. What's so funny, dude?
I turned on the camera right as you were like doing this big yawn and stretch.
Yeah. Welcome in, everybody. Happy Wednesday to you. Padres get on the board last night. 1-0 victory. Good baseball game. 7 hits combined between the two teams. 1 run combined between the two teams. And the Padres walk away with a nice victory. Saw some magnificent plays in the outfield. It's not often that you see 2 robberies in the same game. But that is what Jackson Merrill and Fernando Tatis Jr. were on last night. As Jackson brought back a 2-run shot off the bat of Corbin Carroll. And Josh Naylor had his homer yanked away late. That would have tied it at the time by Fernando Tatis Jr. And the Padres get the win. Unfortunately, as well as Nick Pivetta pitched, he did not factor in the decision. Neither did Merrill Kelly, who also pitched well. Bullpen, fantastic. Once again, I mean, everybody, frankly, was fantastic. No runs. Another shutout for the Pods, and they even a series at 1, 4-game set. So we got 2 more today, tomorrow, both night games. Tonight is the very anticipated Straw Hat, City Connect Straw Hat night.
Yes.
So if you have a ticket, be one of the first 40 thou wow in here, because if you can do it, you'll have one of those nice hats.
I think, you know, those hats are pretty good, and I love the pictures of everyone in the stadium wearing the straw hats because it looks like something out of a movie.
It does. It does, because everybody's going to have them on tonight for sure.
Everybody's going to have them on. I think, did Merrill Kelly take the L in this one?
He did indeed take the L.
That is a really tough L because
Merrill Kelly was spectacular. I mean, 7 innings of work, 4 hits, 1 run. 0 walks, 4 Ks, and he did it all in 77 pitches. Like, on the flip side, Pivetta was awesome, too. He goes 5 2/3, 104 pitches. Now, I have to say, yesterday, in action, I won't speak for Jess. I'll speak for myself. I was on my man, home plate umpire Walsh's head last night.
I listened. You guys were both presenting that.
yeah, we were. But, you know, upon further review, it wasn't as bad as I thought.
Really?
I think in real time it felt that way because it seemed like a lot of the calls that Pivetta could use, he wasn't getting. But the umpire scorecard is out. And he had a 93% accuracy overall. Relative accuracy is a plus 0.8. So he was better than. And then overall favor, also same score, plus 0.08. Called balled accuracy, 7 of 99. And that was what made it feel like he wasn't good. That's a 93% accuracy. The average is 97. 7 of the 99 called balls were true strikes. And those balls tended to feel like they were on Pivetta's side. And then you look at the pitch count. Pivetta did have 3 walks to Merrill's none.
Yeah.
But there's where that kind of discrepancy, extra 27 pitches, makes his start look a little bit different. And he had to leave a little bit earlier because some of those calls didn't go away. And so I think when you're, and I say all this to say, when you're in a game real time, and those calls don't go your way, it does start to feel like there's a bunch of them. And I think the fact that, you know, you saw some of the displeasure from Diaz, Mike Schilt ended up getting kicked out. We weren't the only ones feeling that. That kind of was, but the overall scorecard wasn't bad. And I say all that to say, even when they are bad, or we sometimes perceive them as bad, they're not that bad ultimately. But 93% is a pretty good score, I would say.
It's definitely a good score, and I usually take my cues from the players themselves, the players and managers, and I don't know that Nick Pivetta is the right guy for me to take my cue from, because it sounds like he is just upset about every single call that he doesn't get. But that's what I love about him. The dude is like, I love pitchers that are like him, like where they are just so fired up all the time. Yeah. They get a big strikeout. They have a huge, they like scream off the field. It's awesome. But yeah, right. I did feel like it was that surprises me about the umpire scorecard. It really does. I didn't even look today, but it felt like
it was what much worse than that, right? But certainly, you know, the it's fun kind of going through these scorecards now that I'm following this account to see like the different overall accuracy, overall consistency, and then the call ball accuracy, call strike accuracy. Not bad. It wasn't as bad as I was expecting. Now, either way, doesn't matter. Padres get to win today. Dylan Cease looks to try to figure some things out. He's kind of been up and down all season long. Hasn't really gotten to a groove in which he's been able to go, what, 3-4 starts where he is, you know, like we saw him in 2024. He hasn't got there yet. I still think there's time for him to get there, but certainly tonight would be a good time to start.
Yeah, I'm curious to see what happens the second time through the lineup again, because that's the thing with Dylan Cease. He's really good the first time, he's not so good the second time, and then he's excellent the third time. So
yeah.
I got to think that that's like something that he is talking to Ruben Niebla about and trying to figure out why he's not as good the second time around, and then he's fine the third time around. I mean, is there any sort of answer in your mind for why that could be?
I can't figure it out. You know, typically when it starts trending bad, it usually stays bad. It doesn't go back to brilliant after being good, bad, great. Like, that's not usually how that one particular one works.
It definitely doesn't work that way. But Dylan Cease, I still think is – I did this on the Scravey Show a couple weeks ago. Dylan Cease is still putting the Padres in a position to win games. It just doesn't – work out in his favor because they're not scoring in the games that he's pitching.
Oh, sookie, the Brewers just tied this bad boy in the ninth.
I was like, what the heck just happened? They tied it up in the bottom of the ninth.
Bottom of the ninth. They are down
2-1. Dodgers.
Yep.
Look at Dave Roberts. He's really nervous now.
Runner on third. Chance to be a hero. Monasterio.
Do you know what's kind of crazy about this whole Dodgers thing is they've lost, what, 5 in a row now? It doesn't matter. Like, it seems like they're able to lose 5 in a row, and it doesn't affect them whatsoever.
What do you mean? They've lost. The Padres were 9 games out. Now they're 7. They win today, they could be 6.
If this
goes the way that it's looked like it's going.
And so does that mean we're going to start talking about the Padres winning the division again? Because Chris and I have been
The only people who were like, you know, we should, like, move away from division was Chris Ello. And he's not here to defend himself today. But we will address it if, indeed, it gets shorter by the time he comes back. I don't even think we'll have to address it. I think he'll bring it up himself, maybe forgetting that he said that we shouldn't even think about the division anymore, and then we'll end up having that discussion.
Well, Tony, when I was on vacation, the Padres inched closer, and so I got to say something.
You know,
they could win the division.
Thank you, Chris. We appreciate you coming back to the bandwagon.
Yeah, since he's not here, I'll just bring it up. I mean, Luis Campusano still hasn't been named an All-Star, so that's unfortunate as well. I'm just taking shots at Chris for no reason right now.
It's an all-timer right there. And, you know, to be fair, he said when he came up with that that it could backfire on him.
Oh, yeah, he did say that.
He was very much aware that he was actually really stepping out there on that one.
He was, and I told him, don't do this, Chris. I know where you're going with this. Don't do this. But anyway, two outs now, bottom of the ninth.
Top of the lineup coming up, Sal Frelick.
Frelick is at the plate. We'll let you know.
Lefty DJ on lefty. I want Tanner to give it up. I'm not going to lie. I didn't tell you when we were in L.A., he went out of his way to come find me to say hello.
He loves you.
I don't know why.
I remember during the celebration after they beat the Braves.
He was chasing me with beer.
That's the only reason why
I got soaked was because he was like hunting for me to pour beer on me.
See, you should have talked to him a little bit more and got him to stay in a Padres uniform for a million bucks.
He started coming towards me, and I had flashbacks. I had a suit on because I was doing a game. I was like, nah, man, you can't pour nothing on me today.
I started
to kind of run, and then I realized he wanted to come say hello. So, yeah. So that was I do want him to give this up, though, so they can take the L.
Of course. He's at 19 pitches right now. He has struggled this year at certain points. I mean, he still is Tanner Scott, but he hasn't been the lockdown guy that we saw last year.
Oh, man. let's get to break.
Yes, I have a question for you, though. Oh, sorry. Go ahead.
What do you want to ask me?
I was going to ask you about those catches last night and, like, difficulty.
Okay, so hold that. That's why I was going to break so we can kind of get to that.
Yes.
Okay. We're going to get to break. On the other side, we'll talk about, yes, the unbelievable defense we saw. But we will also talk a little Jackson Merrill. And also, a new body became available here today, designated for assignment. Could he be a piece that the Padres entertain? We'll talk about it on the other side. More Gwen and Chris.
Out here, it's not only the amazing views, but the way time stretches out a little longer and how the breeze hits just right at the summit. With All Trails, you can discover nature's best with over 450,000 trails around the world. Download the free app today.
They're at second, two outs in a scoreless game, fifth inning. And a 2-1 to Carroll, lifted in the air to center field and deep. Merrill's going back. He is at the wall, leaps up, and he made the catch. Jackson Merrill over the wall in center field to take it away from Corbin Carroll and keep this game right where it's at. What a play by Jackson Merrill as he robs a homer for the second time in the last week. Naylor hits it in the air to deep right field. Fernando's going back. He is at the wall, leaps up, and he made the catch! Oh, for the second time tonight, the Padres rob a home run. Merrill got Carroll in the fifth, and now Tatis takes a game-tying homer away from Josh Naylor in the eighth, and it is still 1-0.
You might be lucky enough to see one robbery, but two? You were in luck last night. Jackson Merrill going well up over the wall, as did Fernando Tatis Jr. One would have been a two-run homer. One would have been a solo shot to tie. Good defense all around for the Padres in last night's victory. Welcome in, Tony Gwynn Jr., Matt Scraby. Taking you up to 540.
Nice job.
Thank you. Thank you very much. pregame with Sam Levitt will start there. Let's start with the two catches. Scrape, what'd you think?
I mean, they're amazing. Jackson Merrill is – I read something – here, let me just read what he said. He said, I haven't been doing bleep with the bat. I have to do something with my glove. It's always like that. Whenever you can't produce on one side of the ball, how can you produce on the other side? Stay locked in always. But then he said last week was a little easier because the wall was smaller, but I've got some experience now. I kind of love those ones now. Last year when I saw those, I'd sprint really hard and get to the ball as fast as possible. I'd get to the wall, I'd have to slow up and put my hands on the wall. Now it's just like, no matter what, get there, slow down, and get ready to jump. And he also was saying that he studied Michael Harris II from the Braves because he's really good at robbing home runs as well. But that's just, I mean, another thing that shows me that Jackson Merrill just gets it, and he's going to be a great big leaguer. But two times in the last 2 weeks, Tony, those are some awesome catches.
What was the first one?
Phillies.
At Philly? Oh, yeah, That was, you know what, that one didn't get as much love because it's a shorter wall and you just feel like he should be able to do that. But it was a great catch nonetheless. That prevented a three-run shot. I love that he's studying guys.
Yeah.
And he did it without the cheat code. By the way, Trevor Megill just got himself out of that extra innings with no run coming across. So the Brewers will have a big-time opportunity to win this game here in the 10th. Struck out the side. Is that what you're telling me? Trey told me he struck out. I wasn't quite paying attention. But back to Jackson, I love the fact that he's studying guys like Michael Harris, who was a tremendous defender defensively. And I like that he notices some of those, you know, small little cadences, right? Last year he'd sprint to the wall, and when you sprint to the wall, you got to have vert. Like, you got to be able to go from a standstill and get up, which is hard. You know, not everybody is blessed with jumping ability. His timing on that particular one didn't require him to put his foot into that wall and kind of climb it. He was able to time it, and he kind of was able to jog into his jump, which gives you a better jump. I would say of the two plays, his was probably the easiest. He kind of was back there, and you're dealing with a wall that you know you can get up over. Whereas Toddy, he doesn't even have the option in that particular ball to put his foot into the wall. And it's a corner spot. Those are just harder defensive plays to make. But both of them very, very top tier, as they both were rewarded stars on those plays.
Oh yes. You were hanging out of the booth, hanging the star.
I enjoyed hanging those two. Yeah.
Now,
a little outfield love.
Take me through, like, take me through Jackson's ball off the bat. You see that, you realize that it's going to be near the fence. Like, when do you decide, okay, I'm going to jump at this?
Well, you don't decide. The ball kind of decides for you that you're going to need to jump.
It's just, it amazes me because it's like perfect timing.
It's all about time. I mean, guys who do that often generally play deeper because you got to have, that play is easiest when you have time to get to the wall. That's what made my man from Oakland's plays so ridiculous. What's his name?
I know you're talking about.
Denzel Clark. When on each of the two plays he made, he was running full speed and timed being able to climb a wall at the same time. That is like the hardest thing to do. It's easier to be where Jackson is to kind of get your feet ready, kind of get your steps together, and time to jump right. But I think, you know, once you get to the warning track, that you have about 3.5-4 steps, depending on how big you are, or maybe even less, 3 steps, depending on how tall you are, how long your gait is. And as much as it is skill, it also is a little luck, a little timing. Everything has to line up. Like Toddy was already playing no doubles because it was Naylor, so he didn't have to travel far to get to the wall. He had time to kind of see it, line it up. Those are going to always give you your best opportunity. Anytime you can get to the wall and kind of, you know, stutter step, line it up so you can get your jump off, those are the best ones for sure.
I think people need to remember too, Jackson Merrill's 6'3", so he's not a short guy. I bet you, do you think he could definitely grab rim, right? If he was trying to dunk or something?
You know, I don't know if he was trying to dunk. I mean, you either are dunking or you're not dunking.
Okay, could he grab the rim from standing underneath it?
He's 6'3", he better be able to grab the rim.
Thank you. That's what my dad told me all the time. Oh, you're over 6 feet tall, you can't dunk, what a loser.
That was certainly something that when I was in high school that, you know, we used to pay close attention. If there was a dude had 6 foot and you happen to be 6'5", 6'8", you better not get out jumped or dunked on.
Yeah.
We're going to talk about you like a dog from that point on.
I'm really curious, side note, about this 7'9" guy that plays for Florida, because they keep pumping him up like he's going to be this great guy, but we'll see how he does. Anyway, that was just a side. With Fernando, though, people...
Game time.
Yep, Brewers just win. Walk off. There you go. So, Kirby Yates gives it up.
Swept.
That's kind of crazy, got to say. Astros swept them over the weekend. Brewers
Astros swept them in their place, too. They didn't get to Milwaukee and got swept.
Oh, and then the Padres are going to know that they can get a game on the Dodgers. This is going to be fun tonight. But with Fernando, people keep asking me, why don't they put Fernando back at shortstop? I don't know why this is still
a
question.
Why would you put him back at shortstop?
That's what I tell them. And then last night proves why you don't put Fernando back at shortstop, because there's not a right fielder on this team that makes that catch.
I was just getting ready to say, I don't know that any other right fielder makes that play.
Yeah.
Honestly.
It's incredible. It's incredible. Yeah. But he doesn't need to go back to shortstop, because they say...
He's not going back to shortstop. Yeah. We don't even need to entertain this conversation. Okay. Let's move on to the DFA of today, which you probably will be able to get on Dave Marcus's podcast at some point in the next couple of days. DFA today. Check it out. DJ LeMahieu, designated for assignment from the Yankees. Is it a name that maybe the Padres should entertain? I'm sure the conversation has already started in the Twitterverse out there.
I think it is. Just briefly looking at his stats, he's hitting .266.
He hasn't been back.
128.
He was hurt. How many?
128.
Yeah, so he's just kind of getting his year going.
But
they were kind of redundant at that pitch, at that position. They already had Jazz Chisholm, who was playing out of position at third base. And I think, you know, whatever DJ is bringing defensively may not have been up to standards for the Yankees.
Now, where would he play, though? Like, because the Padres already have a second baseman. They already got a third baseman. DH?
He could DH, maybe. I mean, you could, now you got options where you can give some guys off of their feet, maybe. But, I mean, I don't know if that's the bat. I mean, Gavin's already kind of your left-hand dude, DH, assuming you go out and get an outfielder like you say you want to go get. So, I don't know. It's just an entertaining thought to, you know, he certainly is a bat that could help, but is there a spot for him? Is the position too much of an issue?
I don't know. He apparently, this is what the reports are out of New York, that he did not take it well when they told him that he was going to be moving to the bench, so then he got DFA'd. So maybe he's, like, extra motivated or something to get on a team and just crush everyone.
Whatever.
Whatever.
At this point, like, you need to be motivated at this point. I mean, you have to know that you're at the back end of your career. Maybe it's not that important to you. I don't know.
Yeah, yeah.
I know, being motivated, like, come on, man, like,
you're a major leaguer.
Exactly. What do you want to work a real 9-to-5?
No.
I don't think you do. That should be your motivation in itself.
I don't know that DJ LeMahieu ever has to work a day in his life again. But...
That's a great point. He probably will never have to work.
No, because I've read those things about guys that play professional sports and they don't make enough money, and so then they're like, not that there's anything wrong with this, but they become an insurance salesman, and they're like, this is not as fun as playing professional baseball.
That is the majority of the dudes that play professional baseball. There's only like the 2% that make enough when they retire that it's enough to like never do anything ever again.
That's sad, actually.
I mean, it is, but it isn't. Like, I mean, most people, it's not, you know what, it's not sad, and I'll tell you why it's not sad. It's not sad because, you know, you typically in life, you don't reach your financial like pinnacle until you're like in your 40s, 50s, maybe beyond that, right? But you know, you got a small window to make as much money as you possibly can.
Yep.
And then you either are going to sit on it, you either have invested it and made it, you know, work for you, or you're going to do what most guys have to do, which is get another job to make sure that you can have something at the end when you do end up retiring.
Nate says, keep Greg Garcia out of your mouth, Matt Scraby.
Did you say
No,
Greg
I didn't
Garcia?
Say him. I just said insurance. I don't know. Is he an insurance salesman? And I wasn't taking a shot at insurance people at all whatsoever. I'm saying I've seen a lot of pro athletes go into like real estate, go into insurance sales, stuff like that. Now I feel like I've disparaged every insurance salesman.
You seem to step in it like when no one is expecting it.
Oh,
too.
Nate That's says that Greg Garcia is his insurance agent. So
there you go.
Ah, oh, great.
You over here talking about Gigi, man. You better knock it off.
I love Greg Garcia. He was great
Me too.
Us.
All right, let's get to break. When we return, the Will Clark story has bubbled up. We kind of hit on it yesterday, and I specifically said, you know what? I'm going to wait because this seems like – Scraby was on it first. He's like, this seems like a hit piece.
Oh, yeah.
We're going to delve into it. More information has come out, and we'll give you the context in which this was happening. More Gwen and Chris on the other side.
Epic views, waterfall mists, summit sunsets. It's all better outside. And with AllTrails, you can discover the best of nature with over 450,000 trails around the world. Download the free app today and find your next adventure.
35 on the clock. Tony Gwynn Jr., Matt Scraby, taking you up to 540. Pre-game show, Sam Levitt does a good job for... What was that, Scraby? Eh?
Eh.
Yeah. That ain't right. We talked a little bit about it yesterday, and I made a point that I wasn't going to really talk about it until there was more information, because it just felt like we were only getting, like, a piece of the story. And I also told you, you know what, we might as well just wait to hear from my man Will Clark, because he has no problem telling you what it is. And so, what do you know, I wasn't maybe an hour after I got off the show, Will Clark has spoken. Now, this was presented in a way yesterday from Will Fleming that kind of made it seem as though he, like, stood up Will Clark and, like, just kind of left him out dry there, like, nah, I'm not doing this. I already made my point in Boston. I'm making the same point here. That's how it – I don't know. Maybe I read that.
No. That's how I read it.
But that's how it – that's how it came off.
Yes.
So let's hear from one of my favorites. I don't know if I got to share with you guys the story last year. The Padres had their home, or Giants had their home opener last year against the Padres. Will was there. And, man, I got to talk to that man for, I don't know, an hour and a half. He loved my father, and he knew that when I was a young boy, I was a big, big fan of his because he was constantly, like, fighting my dad for batting titles. So, We have a good relationship. Here is what he had to say. It wasn't to me. It's with my man Eric Burns.
So Matt Williams and Bob Melvin want me to go out there and work with him around first base. No problem. And we weren't gonna, like, go through anything physical. We're just gonna walk through and say, hey, look, if throw's coming from over there, stand this way. If throw's coming from over there, stand that way. It wasn't gonna be this big thing, right? And Friday, Saturday, Sunday, he did not come out early at all, period. Not at all. Now, in fact, he didn't even hit on the field, right? And everybody's like, oh, my God, I'm so sorry, Will. I'm so sorry. I'm like, hey, don't worry about it. I said, I know what the happened. I said, he didn't want to go out and be at first base and be 20 feet in front of their freaking dugout with, you know, what went on in Boston. And now he's working with me at first base. He didn't want to have to go through all that through the press and the media. And so, anyway, so I completely understand. But Rafael Devers, the next time I'm in San Francisco, your ass will be on the field at first base. Just letting you know that. Just from the
Yeah, but if he's not going to go out, he's going to tell you.
Hey, look, even if I got to go grab you by the back of the neck and drag your ass out there, you will be at first base.
There it is.
I have to tell you guys, these are the people, not necessarily Will personally, but these are the type of personalities that I learned baseball from. Like, just no holes barred. They ain't going to try to, they have no filter. They don't know how to, like, be politically correct. They just tell you exactly how it is, right? And so I, Scraby and I brought this, wanted to bring this back up because he alluded to it yesterday. He said it just felt like it was said in a way to kind of only push the narrative that Devers is somehow like this guy that just refuses to do anything a team asks him to.
Yeah.
Now, I hearing Will talk about it, I understood exactly what Devers was probably trying to avoid. You just finished telling a team to go pound sand. I'm not going to go play first base. And then they show up. I mean, this would have been like the very next weekend. This wouldn't even have been that long. He got traded, and within, I think, a series or two.
Yeah, it was like next series.
Playing Boston. And he's 20, and it's literally, it's probably less than 20 feet, honestly, from the visiting dugout that your first base is at. It would have just been a, it would have been all kinds of weird. I don't know that he would have been able to get the kind of work that they were actually, you know, trying to get done, being distracted that that is the kind of setup. And you know, everybody would have been looking at it. Boston would have, Boston's media would have been looking at it. Oh, this guy told us to go pound sand. Now look at him. He's out there in front of there working his behind off.
Oh, he booted three balls.
Trying to be the best first baseman possible. And that's why I didn't respond to it yesterday, because I, you could just tell, like, it seems like there's more to the story.
Do you
want to
hear
simply...
let's hear the original clip from Will
Fleming.
Yeah, play
the original
because
clip.
This is what is making its rounds around the internet. And he was on with sister station WEEI in Boston.
Trying to get big hitters, and they think he's going to win them divisions and hit a bunch. He's going to hit home runs. Of course he is. They don't yet know what is going to happen with the player. I was there the second day. Will Clark was there to work on ground balls with him at first base, and Raffy didn't show up. So that's the person that these guys have been dealing with for a long time. And again,
there you go. I mean, he clips it in a way, or they clip it in a way that makes
I was
really...
going to say, now, to be fair, we don't know what Will said prior to the clip, and we don't know what he said after the clip. But how they cut it and put it out made it seem as though, oh, see, we told you Devers was a bad dude, man. He ain't trying to help nothing.
Did you hear the host too? They were like, oh, ha.
Exactly. They were the host of two dudes next to him, were kind of perpetuating the whole narrative. Now we'll say this. This is Will came out today in a tweet, an X tweet, or what are we calling it? An Xer.
I like the Z, but no, we're not
the
using
Z?
That.
What is it?
No, it's a tweet. It's a tweet.
Okay. Tweet. Since the whole of San Francisco City, I think he's trying to say the whole world or whatever.
He says the whole of SF. I don't know, yeah.
Yeah, I don't know what that means. Since the whole of SF seems mad at me, I just want to clarify again. I was repeating a story that one of the great giants told me on his own pod. I'm not trying to push a narrative or opine about the trade. No one has any ill will towards Rafi. It was just time for a change here.
Backpedal.
I hear you, but that's not how it was kind of presented. I'm just saying.
It was definitely not presented in this way. And yesterday I said it was a hit piece because it sounded like a hit piece. This guy, Will Fleming, knows that he's going to get a bunch of clicks on something like this. And he could claim, oh, I was taken out of context, or, oh, I was just retelling a story.
That's kind of the favorite of everybody, like, I was taken out of context.
Yeah, and I do understand that. I do understand being taken out of context, because sometimes we do have a clip, and it's like, it says one thing, but it really doesn't mean that, because everything that's discussed around it. But Will Fleming knew that this was going to be big Boston Red Sox news. This is what the Red Sox fans want. And he was just giving them what they want, but he also, at the same time, made everybody think that Rafael Devers is a bad player.
Well, you know, a bad person. You know how you say people can get quoted out of context on that? In this case, the actual offense is not giving the context behind Devers in that case. It was just kind of presenting it in a way that fit what we were talking about when he wouldn't play a position in Boston. And we felt like that kind of was a little short-sighted in how we were hearing it. And it turns out it kind of was based off of what Will Clark kind of expressed to us. But I felt like we needed to kind of revisit that today after kind of touching our toes in the water yesterday.
I do have a question about, like, why wasn't there any communication to Will Clark that he didn't want to go out? You know, if Will Clark's showing up day after day after day, like, and I'm not saying this is Devers' fault, but the Giants should have told him, hey, he's not going to go out there. You don't need to be here, or you don't need to be waiting for him.
That's a good question. I don't know. It would seem to me that everybody would kind of understand, like, let's wait till the next series to do this.
Yeah.
You know, Phillies are coming into town. It's not, you know, it's... We'll be here at home still. And maybe, and listen, Will did say, next time I'm in town. So maybe he only had those 3 days that he was going to be there.
True.
And it just wasn't the right time for it. Who knows? But I would think that somebody would have went out there and said, hey, well, don't he's not going to come out today. Boston's here. It's just that he's not comfortable or whatever the case may be.
And I also saw a picture on Twitter of Devers taking grounders at first.
Yeah.
So he did do some work at first. He's
clearly been doing work at first base, and that's also why I had saw those pictures before this story broke that he was doing, that he had been doing work. So it's clear he's doing the work there. So common sense would tell you, okay, maybe he's not out there because Boston's in town, and you know, it's just not something he's comfortable doing. I think that was pretty obvious. Let's move to the other baseball story. I don't want to spend too much time on it. ABS. I think this is a great idea, by the way. ABS will be used in the All-Star game. Why not? It's an exhibition. It's a showcase. You get a chance to showcase what you are planning on bringing. Get a little taste of how it's going to all play out. I think this is a great place to do it. You know, you've always loved the idea of starting stuff in the minor leagues, but this is like your only chance to do it at the big league level. In a game that a lot of eyeballs will be on, but also doesn't count.
Yeah, I have questions about this ABS thing, though.
Now, real quick, I saw Jeff Passan's tweet about, you know, I don't feel like we have the same resistance. Because in his tweet, he's talking about how, you know, people are saying it's going to ruin baseball. I don't feel that type of resistance to it like we did when they went to the pitch clock, when they did all of the rule changes, where there was clear resistance. I put my hand up. I was one of them at that time.
Yeah.
I don't feel like that's the conversation right now when it comes to ABS. And this is a kind of a nothing burger. It doesn't really matter one way or the other because it's going to be coming one way or the other anyway.
Yeah.
I found that tweet interesting because last time I felt that, I felt like kind of the hesitation, push back against it. I don't feel that this time around with the ABS.
I don't feel it either, except for Chris Ello, but he's slowly coming around to it.
Chris is a resistant of everything. I think that's
he was resistant of the Ghost Runner, although he still doesn't like the Ghost Runner.
Yes,
he's resistant of the pitch clock, which I understood because it was kind of weird to all of a sudden have a clock involved. But like Jeff Passan says in his tweet, there's going to be growing pains, but we're all going to get used to it.
If we didn't have the pitch clock in the put yesterday's game aside, let's go to those four previous games that went 257, 301, 258, 301.
Those are like four-hour games.
If we didn't, if we didn't have a pitch clock, man, we would have been here forever.
Yes, you would have.
Oh,
I remember doing a
pitch clock. I'm sorry, that gives me hives. It just reminds me of like doing a game from a TV. Oh.
Now, I want to know, like, if the players are do they still have the same challenge rules? Do they still only get two a game on each side? For the ABS system in the All-Star game?
I'm assuming that it's going to be played out the same way it was played out in spring training. So, you know, and that's something that MLB should make sure they're sending the memos out on, because, you know, they have a tendency to put things out there and then tell nobody how it's actually going to be ran. You know what I'm saying? So
yes,
let's go ahead and make sure the memo goes out for the All-Star game, exactly how they're going to play it, challenges, all of that.
I'm fascinated to know how teams are going to use this as strategy. Like, I know it's not coming to the game till probably next year or the year after, but, like, take last night, for example. A pitch early in the game, are they challenging? Or are they going to just hold their challenges until late in the game?
And I don't think we know. Because, you know, the strategy for the extra inning, it took a few games before people started figuring out what the strategy was going to be.
Yeah.
And then now everybody kind of has the same strategy as it pertains to, you know, you're down one, whether you're trying to shoot for the two runs or whatnot. I would imagine that an All-Star game is not going to be enough to figure out what the strategy is. I would imagine we won't know that until whenever it's instituted in a regular season and we start to see some games, you know, added against it.
I could totally see, like, a player in the All-Star game using the challenge in the first inning, and then everybody's like, man, you just wasted one of our challenges in the first inning. But there's got to be a designated guy that's allowed to do it. Because the manager cannot call for a challenge, right? It's just pitcher, catcher, and batter.
Player. Or batter, yeah. I don't know, man. This was a question Jesse and I had for each other a lot during spring training, but it never really manifests itself because you guys are coming in and out of the lineup, and, you know, there really can't be a strategy in spring training using that because it's like a new guy. Maybe at the end of spring training you could maybe start to do some strategy, but why? At that point you're getting ready for the season. It's not going to be a part of your current season, so why even mess with it? So I don't know that teams really did too much strategizing on it. I mean, maybe there were some conversations in the coach's room after some of those games in spring training, but I don't know that they got too in-depth with it.
I would think Manny has ultimate authority to challenge a pitch if he wants to.
For sure. For sure, but if it's this, man, you lose your two challenges in the first two innings and you get to 7 and 8, 9 innings and there's some calls that you wish you had that challenge for.
I think you got to save them for the second half of the game, unless there's something that is egregious and totally changes the game. Like,
you know, maybe you're facing a Wheeler, someone
there
like
you
that
go.
Early that you might use it where you know, like, man, runs is going to be hard to come by. This might be our only shot. Maybe you challenge in that spot.
It is kind of funny, though, that players sometimes think it's a ball, and it's not. It's actually a strike.
I tell Jesse all the time, we are so wrong so often.
Yeah.
When it comes to players, you know, calling balls or strikes.
Yeah, yeah. Bad.
It's a good thing we don't have to do it. So we can still be critical because we never will have to get behind there. You know, we don't see in the Major League Baseball, and you see this in the NBA, former players becoming officials or becoming an umpire.
Oh, that is true.
Like you've seen it a few times in the NBA, guys who've had, you know, good careers and then be officials, and it makes perfect sense. You don't see anybody in baseball going
out. No, they don't want anything to do with that. Are you kidding me? Are you kidding me? Last night, though, I thought it was funny when you guys were talking about, or Torey Lovello came out in the field, and you guys had no idea what he was trying to get the umpire's attention for. And you were like, maybe it would be nice to use the microphone that you have as an umpire to tell us what's going on. Like, do you think that's ever going to happen? Because it makes sense.
It should. It really should. The more, and I feel like the more these guys, and when I say these guys, umpires, get comfortable with the mic, I'm hoping that it'll eventually open it up to more explanation. I think what ended up being the issue was
Jason going to his mouth. Fingers.
Yeah. You gotta wipe it off if you go to your mouth. That's the only thing I can think of. Because they didn't even go check him. It was like,
yeah,
they just had a conversation and couple of the umpires started to come, and it's like, never mind. And then it just moved on. I'm pretty sure that's what it was about.
I really appreciated your guys' breakdown because you guys went through all the different scenarios of what it may be, and you're like, and Brian Esposito is handling it very well, so it's not that big of a deal, I guess. Like, you shouldn't have to.
We're just, we were body language readers at that point because no one would turn their mic on. So, you know,
it's kind of crazy. Mike Schilt was ejected last night. He does not like to get ejected.
He doesn't like to get ejected?
No, he said that he prides himself on being a guy who doesn't have players get ejected himself. Doesn't want to get ejected.
He definitely does. But it was funny when he walked out and threw his paper to the side. Like, let's go then.
That's my favorite part. When they toss you, it's like all hell breaks loose. Now that you've tossed me, I'm coming out on the field.
And he was basically telling him, like, at least, and I'm an amateur lip reader, by the way, but it looked like he was telling him basically, like, this dude is pitching a hell of a game, and you're squeezing him back here. And that was kind of the gist of it. And all the other umpire could do was go, all right.
And then he went over the line, and he goes, you're out of here!
No. He didn't say that at the time. When he got ejected, he was telling them where those pitches were.
Yes,
when he came out to get his money's worth, he was telling him at that point, this guy is pitching a hell of a game and you're squeezing him. Something along those lines.
A little disappointed he didn't take the glasses off this time.
It wasn't worthy of that. He took them off for Adrian. Adrian got the glasses off in New York when
he did.
He lost all of it.
Yeah,
sometimes, but that's when you know he's really upset. He takes the glasses off, chucks those along with the scorecard. Yeah, he's on one that day.
It's on. Ding, ding, ding.
All right, let's get to break. We got the Gambit coming up next.
We got the Gambit.
Gambit up next. More Gwen and Chris.